We are live for another great edition of Sports Club. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us this week. We are joined. I'm glad to have him back. He has been quite busy and probably pretty glad to be back in the state of Georgia, where I believe it topped out at 65 today, and 65 in February sounds good to me. He is the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. I bet you're pretty glad for 65 weather, right?
Yes, after leaving Green Bay and being up in the tundra, 65 is almost like 90 in the summer here.
Yeah, quite enjoyable. But it is good to have you back on. We've got tons to get to. Just seems like every time we think the NFL doesn't have something going on, they spit out about five or six cool stories. Plus the stuff we've come up with on our own. We're going to talk some basketball a little later as well. We'll tell everybody about the Georgia Swarm experience I had, which was pretty cool. But, you know, I want to start right out with the most late-breaking thing. We mentioned it right before we came on air here. A.J. McCarron is going to be a unrestricted free agent as of March 14th. This pretty much puts him at the top of the list, of the free agent list, with Kirk Cousins. And it really kind of is going to – I mean, people like Denver, people like some other people I think are going to be involved. What do you think A.J. McCarron could do to the market, and where do you think he could go?
Well, it's going to be hard to say, Jeremy. If you notice that a lot of teams right now are – a lot of players are coming in from college ready to play. Mm-hmm. And so right now, is there a need for McCarron and a Cousins? Absolutely, from a veteran perspective. However, it's going to be interesting to see what teams are doing currently with backup quarterbacks that they have. So the market for quarterbacks is going to be quite interesting to see what they do and where they possibly can land, because there are some teams that need the help, but there are also teams that are in position to draft players. And if you notice, if you looked at the last couple of draft classes, a lot more players are coming in ready to play now and becoming impact players now. So it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out for McCarron as he now becomes a free agent on the 14th of March.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, Cincinnati does have options with this. I was just talking about this with somebody here at the studio right before we came on as well. They said, well, I mean, Cincinnati's going to watch him walk out the door. And I was like, not necessarily. I believe if he does leave, they get some sort of compensation, maybe a third, fourth round or something like that, although I'm not 100%. But Cincinnati does have options. They could try to restructure his deal and sign him late minute before he becomes a free agent. They could sign him to some sort of deal. They could kind of bait and switch and make him the top quarterback, getting rid of Andy Dalton and putting him on the free agent list. They could franchise tag him, which would kind of be goofy because even with his limited experience, he'd be getting a Jimmy Garoppolo-like deal with that. He'd be making like $20, $25 million out of the gate for that 1 year. So, I mean, they do have options, but more than likely McCarron's going to be on the list. You did bring up the draft, and I wanted to bring up something we were talking about beforehand, too. Every year, me and you like to kind of go back and forth about maybe one of the guys in the draft that we really like. You told me about Deshaun Watson about 2 years before he came out, and that was more than a grand slam. That ball might still be traveling. You really hit it out of the park with that one. I told you I like Brett Hundley, and you said you liked him as well, and he's done pretty good in Green Bay. I don't think he's going to be an Aaron Rodgers, you know, blow the socks off somebody, but he's going to be a good quality starter somewhere down the road, whether it's Green Bay or not. But the guy I told you that I like at this draft is Luke Falk, I think is his name. People don't know a whole lot about him, but I implore people to go check him out. Is there somebody that you think we should have our eye on so far?
I like the kid out of Georgia, Roquan Smith. I think he's going to be a dynamic player in the NFL. I think he made the right decision at coming out right now. I don't think there's anything else he can do in college football at this point, and I think that he's going to be that dominant guy in the draft this year. I really think that he has that spotlight right now.
I definitely agree with that. I got to see a handful of his games this year, and He's definitely something special. You can tell he's definitely the cream at the top of the crop there. Real quickly, Luke Falk was a Washington State Cougar, for those of you on the text line that were asking. He is actually out of Utah, but he's from Utah, but he played at Washington State. So if you want to look up more on him, He's the Washington State Cougar quarterback. But that leads us to another quarterback, and I know we both agree on this, which may be a little boring to some listeners, but Johnny Manziel, in his attempt to come back and potentially make a 90-man roster, which seems like his goal, should be to be a starting quarterback, not the 90-man. I think he should aim a little higher. But instead of playing in Canada, apparently, I don't know if that ever, if that's even still a thing on his radar. Apparently, he's going to stay in Texas and play in this 2 or 4 week league where there's only four teams. I think it's like a 2 or 3 week kind of spring camp league. And what do you think his end goal in doing this is, and do you think it's going to help his comeback?
I think in the case of Mr. Manziel and what he's been up against in his career, you have to be willing to change your playground, your playmates, and your playthings. And I think that the fact that he was, you know, he had some issues when he was in college there in Texas. And this particular league, although I hope it flourishes, we're always looking for opportunities for players to play professionally. I think that with him not going to Canada, which is a very reputable league, it's been around longer than the NFL, the structuring and the discipline in a league such as the CFL would help truly gauge where he is as a professional. I don't think this league that he's going to play in the next couple of weeks will be an add value to what he's trying to do overall. If the goal is just to make the 90-man roster, what happens after that? I mean, is that just the goal, or is the goal to try to go back into the National Football League and become the player that you hope that you could become and be as they drafted you as a number one pick? So I don't think that there's anything that this league can add to him. I felt good with him making the decision initially to go to Canada, which would give him some value and give him some structuring. But this league that he's looking to play in, although it's an upstart league, I don't think there's anything – it hasn't proven itself yet. It hasn't produced any a byproduct into the National Football League or into the CFL for that matter, even if these are players that have formerly played in these leagues. So I don't think there's anything there that he can accomplish by playing in this league as he could have had he gone to Canada and been around seasoned veteran coaches, which a lot of those guys have already coached in the National Football League. So that I think there it would have been a better value to him versus what he's trying to get done now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I want to go back to your point about, you know, if he does make a 90-man roster, what then? Because, I mean, it really depends on which roster. Most of the time, an extra quarterback, a third or fourth quarterback, is just a camp arm at that point so that the starter doesn't have to throw as much during the spring, summer, and even into the preseason. So, I mean, if you look around the league, there's only probably four or five teams that – could actually benefit from his services where he would actually be better than the quarterbacks they have on their roster. I mean, it's not like even if Atlanta signed him, he's not starting over Matt Ryan because he's not starting over Matt Schaub. So it seems like he should kind of pull back, you know, not worry about people seeing him in pads and running around right now, go to Canada, kind of regroup, get a better game plan than he has. Cause I definitely agree. As much as I feel like the professional football world needs a Johnny Manziel type person because of the eyes and that'll be on him and the extra attention, hopefully for the good reasons. He can play pretty good. He's just, he has all these other hangups, and as much as the football world needs him, this is not the way he should approach it.
And I agree. I do agree with you. That's my biggest concern.
Yeah. I feel like he still doesn't quite have the right people around him, but you know, speaking of people around a star or a potential star, in this case it is a star, we're going to swap to basketball for a minute. And the Cavaliers decided that if the ship's going to go down, they're going to have a completely new crew pretty much, as they traded like 7 or 8 of their 12 main players, recouping about 4 or 5 new players. But, I mean, they've actually won 4 in a row. Like you said beforehand, they haven't really played anybody. But my question is, are the Cavs building to help LeBron with not only this year or beyond, or are they preparing for after LeBron?
Well, I would have to think at some given point you have to prepare after. At this point, those players were already there when they won championships. I'm pretty sure the majority of them were already on the roster. So it's not like he's unfamiliar with those players. They're just now finally getting their opportunity to play. I think they tried to build a super team to make a quick run for it and solidify their ability to go and, you know, and win the East and move back into the finals. But anytime you have superstars or perceived superstars come together, the biggest issue in a locker room is the egos and the personality. How do you manage those? And as we can see, that became a train wreck for the Cavaliers. So I think at some point they have to prepare for the exodus of Mr. James, because he's done pretty much all he can possibly do in basketball. The only thing he can do now is just try to replicate the process of a championship. He's already, you know, he's done that twice now, once in Miami, once in Cleveland, and now that's pretty much the only thing that you can play for is that. And he's been in the league for a while. You know, how much more will his body really hold up to the, you know, the wear and tear and the grind of those games that they have to play to get there? I think it's an 82-game schedule, if I'm not mistaken. So I think they're slowly preparing for – they have to be prepared for him to make the decision either way of whether he wants to come back or if he wants to leave. So it's better to have a plan than not have a plan at all. And I think that the Cavaliers organization probably are looking at, he's always welcome to stay, but we have to also prepare it. So this day will come. We don't know when. If it's not a matter of if, but when it's going to happen.
Right, because, I mean, he's left before and left them. They didn't really leave them high and dry, but they went from a 65-win team to like a 35-win team in him leaving that following year to go to Miami. So, yeah, I do see where at some point you do have to prepare for. At some point, LeBron's not going to be here, whether it's retirement, whether he goes elsewhere. But these quick trades like this, I feel like this is the way they're trying their best to keep LeBron in town, because honestly, as long as Lonzo Ball is in LA, I don't think LeBron wants to go there, because he don't want to have to deal with Lonzo's dad, LeVar Ball, who is already trying to not only take over the Lithuanian professional leagues, he's trying to take over the Lakers. And, you know, say in a statement like, in a couple years, Lonzo's not going to re-sign with the Lakers if the Lakers don't sign both of his brothers. At some point, Magic Johnson's going to get tired of LeVar running his mouth, and at some point he's going to move on from Lonzo Ball, and it could be sooner rather than later.
I agree. I like his energy. I like his involvement with his sons as a father, but you also have to know when you're at the end of the line, and they have to be, as young men, take the torch and run with the things that you downloaded in them, and part of that is their ability to play basketball. I think that at this point he's loud, to be honest with you. I think he's loud, mm-hmm. And I think when he's going to force GMs to do in the NBA is to start turning down the volume. Unfortunately, the casualties of that will be his sons and their future in playing basketball professionally. Again, no one's going to make that deal, a sweetheart deal, with all three of his sons playing on the same basketball team. I mean, you would have to have to equate that. You would need for them to be Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James. I mean, you would have to have that in those type of players. And although his son is doing fairly well with the Lakers, I mean, he's still young. I mean, he's still a young basketball player. And I don't think he needs the added pressure right now of the media based upon, you know, statements that his father makes right now. Again, every parent wants to be proud of their children. They want to encourage them. But sometimes you can just be loud. And I just feel right. And that's no disrespect to Mr. Ball. That's just being honest. I think that's been done enough times now to where people are now starting to not listen anymore, actually. They're just diverting that attention to something else now. So hopefully he will, you know, take some time and take a step back and see how it is impacting his children, not just professionally, but probably even emotionally. And he'll, you know, he'll have the right people around that maybe can, you know, have a conversation with him and tell him, you know, hey, stay involved, but, you know, but maybe not be so loud.
I think what LeVar needs to do, and I think Johnny Manziel, to tie it back in, actually needs to think about this as well. They need to think about, is their number one priority to further the playing careers of the people involved, or are they trying to build a brand? Because whichever of those is the priority is what they should do. It seems like to me LeVar has tried to build his brand, and Manziel is too. They're more worried about the image and the brand than what's actually the product that they're trying to push on people. So I think they need to reevaluate, and both of those people need to realize that it's about more than selling shoes and T-shirts.
I agree. I think if you just go and you do what you naturally do, all of those rewards will come.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I guess we'll transition into, I guess, the most negative thing we'll talk about today, and that's the 49ers, Reuben Foster, who I believe is a rookie this year, has a domestic violence charge. And it's all speculation as far as things I've heard. I don't want to put things in his mouth or say that he did things that he didn't. But from what I heard, he has a little bit in common with Ray Rice, except for it was not in an elevator. So he does have a checkered past already. I think this just comes down to San Francisco took a gamble, and it come up craps. I think they're ready to move on if the NFL is ready to move on, and it's unfortunate because this kid can play.
Well, here's the problem. I don't know all the details of Mr. Foster's situation. What I will say is this, though. All players understand that the player code of conduct is the Bible to their future. And anything that becomes detrimental to the integrity of the National Football League as a brand will be dealt with uniquely internally with the league. Now, again, you mentioned the Ray Rice incident. And then on the flip side of that coin, you can look at Ezekiel Elliott's situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're under a rookie contract, so there's nothing to negotiate, okay? Part of what gives that the rookie contract strength from the ownership's perspective is situations like this. Again, I'm not condoning or condemning him because I don't know the facts. But when these incidents continue to pop up consistently, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be driving under the influence, whether it's drug abuse, this is where the ownership at large can say, this is why we structure the contracts the way that we do. Because I have you're an investment, and every owner wants to make sure that they're getting value for their investment. So with so much going on with players and it's moving so fast, transitioning from high school to college and then college to the pros, it's a different environment. You're a businessman at this point. You have to look at your business, and you're the CEO of that business. Call yourself. And the only way you're going to survive this is if you start making sure that you understand the business part of football. Again, it's unfortunate. Again, it's a misfortune. Hopefully, whatever it is, they get it resolved. If he needs help, I hope that he seeks help. If it's an anger management issue, again, like I said, I don't want to put all the onus onto him because I don't know all the facts. But the one thing that's for certain is that when all else fails, that portion of the CBA will be the Bible and the determining factor of your career in the National Football League, amongst other things. But that will be the determining factor, and I hope that they get the matter resolved. And I hope that whatever it is, if it works into his favor because they found some of these allegations to be not true, so be it. If not, then understand this is why this is in place.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why that's why every handful of years, both sides, the NFL and the Players Association, sit down to hash these kinds of things out, because neither one of them really want to deal with it, but it's just part of life and part of things that happen. So it's good that they have these, and like you said, even some programs in place where if it is some sort of substance issue or some sort of it could be depression, or it could be all kinds of different things. And if there is an issue going on that's beyond the domestic violence that's causing it, then maybe he can get the help he needs or whatever it is, so that this doesn't become a big pattern. And, you know, maybe he can stay in the league, because like I said, the kid can play, but at the end of the day, to me, it's more about being a good human than it is being a star football player.
I agree. And on the other side of that too, you have to kind of watch the company that you keep. I don't want people to just make athletes villains, but sometimes they are also victims. And that's another kind of slippery slope that goes along with this as well. There are a lot of significant others of these athletes that understand what the rules are, and they understand how far some things can be pushed up. Again, I am not condoning any violence on either party's part, but that also exists in a dark place as well. There are some situations, and I'm sure there are some cases, maybe not as many, but I'm sure a few, where some of these athletes are being abused because they know what's at stake if they retaliate, and that other party understands what's at stake if they retaliate as well. So that's the other side of it, you know what I mean? That makes it tough. It makes it right. Really, really tough. But again, if you surround yourself with the right people, then you would hope, and more importantly, you would pray that they would see these things coming before they escalate to those levels, and can kind of help you find balance in the process.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But I guess we'll see how the rest of Reuben Foster's offseason plays out. I do know that there's a particular owner in the greater DFW area that is watching it pretty intently to make sure that if his guy had to sit out so long, then he feels like probably everybody should have to. So we'll have to kind of see how that plays out. Like we said, we don't want to put anything – we don't want to say anything detrimental that is just speculation. So we just know that he was charged with domestic violence, and they're looking into it. And San Francisco has all but pretty much told the league that whatever they say goes at this point, because the NFL is looking to it as well. Let's go ahead and talk about the Eagles, because it's still a pretty big topic right now. And the major question, and I know it's super early on this, but I feel like it's a pretty good answer, actually. I mean, a pretty easy answer. Could the Eagles repeat as Super Bowl champions? Let me throw some things out here real quick. They could kind of lose a step, and the reason they could do that, first of all, it's hard to repeat because of things like the NFC was a little down this year, even though it was stronger than the AFC. People like Aaron Rodgers are going to be healthy again. People who had down years, you know, Cam Newton is going to be 100% again. These guys that typically are the big threats in the NFC are suddenly healthy. The big players are starting to come back. So that's going to be a little tough. The NFC is also going to be more loaded than usual because, like I said, most of the franchise quarterbacks, including Jimmy Garoppolo, now he's in the NFC. It just makes it that much stronger of a conference. Their division is going to be better because we all know the Dallas Cowboys are going to improve a little bit because Zeke won't be suspended. We know Dak will get a little better. We know they're shaking up the coaching staff a little bit here and there. They're going to address their defense. We know that Washington upgraded at quarterback and went from Kirk Cousins to Alex Smith. We know that the Giants are going to be better because, frankly, they couldn't be much worse than they were. They got a new coach and staff. And they actually have a really rough schedule. They have to play some really really tough people. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick just to tell you some of the home games and away games they have here. Here it is. So at home this year, so if you're in the greater Philadelphia area, they're going to welcome in the Cowboys, the Redskins, the Giants. Those are all division games. They get the Panthers and the Falcons at home. They get the Texans and the Colts and Minnesota. Well, Houston's going to be better because of Deshaun Watson. We all know that. J.J. Watt's going to be back. The Colts have a new staff, and if Andrew Luck comes back or if Jacoby Brissett can do well, then they're going to bounce back. So all those teams are going to be bringing it. Their away games so far this year, they're going to go to Dallas, Washington, and New York, obviously. They go to the Superdome in New Orleans, arguably, besides Green Bay, one of the hardest places to go on the road and win. They're going to go to Tampa Bay. That might be the easiest game they have all year, and it might not. They're going to go to Jacksonville, who's hungry to beat everybody again. They go to Tennessee, and then they go to L.A. to take on the Rams. It's one of the most stacked schedules, and we don't even know what order yet. We do know they're going to have the kickoff game, the kickoff Thursday night game, and I believe they're going to have at least two, if not three, either Sunday night or Monday night games. So my easy answer is I don't think they're going to repeat. I think they're going to barely make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's very hard to repeat based on the formula that you just so eloquently put out. But there's also a thing called free agency.
Right.
And you're not quite sure if you're going to have the same team. And normally what happens, and the only team I've seen do it successfully in most recent years are the Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks and maintain, you know, a large portion of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to be measuring themselves against you. So now every game that you play starting the next season is a playoff game. You don't have a regular season. You have 16 playoff games, not including the postseason, because everybody is going to be looking to measure themselves against the champions. And so that's why I say they won't repeat. Just due to free agency, just due to what you spoke of with other teams getting healthier, better, draft picks, finding those one or two pieces that they were missing. And I think it's a lot of pressure to try to repeat. Is it possible? Yes. But you don't see it often, and those are the reasons why.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, they lose Frank Reich, who is now the Indianapolis head coach. We'll get to that in a second. They lose, I believe they lost their offensive coordinator. I don't know if they did their defensive, but they're a lot like New England. They're losing a lot of the coaching staff, and it's a lot of the more prominent guys. So, I mean, it's going to be real interesting. I still think they're a front runner to win their division. I don't think they're going to blow a lot of people out. Like I said, I feel like they're going to make the playoffs, but it's going to be a real early exit. But let's see. I just said that Frank Reich has went from being the quarterback coach of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. He is now the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Not only do I congratulate him on this, but it's a curious case. It's a lot like the John Gruden, Oakland Raiders, Jack Del Rio situation, where you're not sure exactly when conversations took place. In Oakland's case, it was like Del Rio had the rug pulled out from under him. And oddly enough, the same agent has to do with all four coaches. And when I add Josh McDaniels in there, that's the fourth coach. McDaniels obviously pulled out of the job. I think it was one of those cases where the NFL rule that disallowed them from hiring him until late. It's one of those, I mean, even a kid or even just one of us, if you give us long enough to determine that we can back out, a lot of times we're going to back out of something. So I think that's what happened there. It ended up where the agent is no longer representing Josh McDaniels. You get Frank Reich, who steps in, who at the beginning of the postseason told the agent, "Hey, I'm going dark, basically. I don't want to interview for anything until after all this is over. I want to concentrate on this. So he didn't interview at all in any of this. Chris Ballard said that he never, who is the GM, said that he never asked about the health of Andrew Luck, which either makes him not smart as a coach, or maybe he had a heads up from maybe his agent saying, hey, everybody keeps asking this question. They're getting annoyed by it. If you want the job, don't mention it, because that would be the number one thing I would want to know about the Colts job. Jacoby Brissett, I think I could do something with, especially he's a quarterback coach. He's good at working with quarterbacks. You can easily see what he did with Carson Wentz. But it just seems like there's some weird gray area in here where he just kind of – I think he was the only candidate left on the radar for them.
I agree. I think he was the only candidate that was left on the radar, especially with everything that took place. It was quite bizarre in where that organization was going and thought they had locked up the head coach early, only for things to change. Again, they still get a good coach, but a lot of it's going to be riding on what happens with his quarterback situation with Andrew Luck. I mean, that's going to be a key component into how their season is going to go. That's their number one question mark right now. What are they going to do at quarterback? And will Luck be healthy enough to, you know, to step back into it and command the huddle again? So it's going to be quite interesting as to what the Colts look like. I think they have enough good players on that team to turn it around, but I think it's going to be instrumental with what they decide to do at quarterback early and downloading that system and that game plan into those the quarterbacks and getting the ball rolling. I think that's just going to be the key to his success right now. The immediate impact to his success there in with the Colts.
Yeah, I agree. And the problem is the Colts in all the not so great moves they've made in the past. I think getting Chris Ballard as their GM was a good one. I think Frank Reich as the head coach is going to be a good one too. But all the other misses they've had in drafts and free agency and all the other eclectic mixes of people they put together, it's really not the world's best time for them to try to start over and make a great run at it, but they kind of don't have a choice. I mean, Tennessee did pretty well last year. Houston's going to be a lot better because the injured people are coming back. And you got Jacksonville, who is still considered one of the top teams in the AFC after that run they had last year. So, I mean, the Colts are kind of, fourth place looking up. But this is the NFL. You never know what's going to happen.
So very true.
Now, I want to save the team thing for here in a minute. This is actually a question. I mentioned it to you before, but this is actually a question that I've wanted to ask you in particular because you have a connection to at least one of these guys. But we're going to kind of predict the future of both the GM of Oakland, Reggie McKenzie, and the current GM of the Baltimore franchise, Ozzie Newsome. I want to start with Ozzie. Now, what we know about Ozzie is that he's going to step down, I believe, after this year. They've already had the succession plan in place as to who's taking over. He's going to stay as a advisory role of some kind. Do you think this is Ozzie finding the exit strategy to maybe retire, or do you think maybe Baltimore is trying to make moves and Ozzie's not in the future?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think that he's done a phenomenal job over the years with the success of the Baltimore Ravens. If you look at what they were able to do and what he was able to do with players who are Hall of Famers and Super Bowls that they able to have establishment under his reign. I also think that the piece of this that might be missing is that there might have been some strain earlier in the season when there was some issues at quarterback or trying to solidify some things. And if I remember, Mr. Kaepernick name came up. And if I remember that there was some conversations that became quite passionate between Mr. Newsome and ownership. So I think that this move right now is a move for him to just go ahead and retired. He's been in the NFL a long time, and I think a lot of times people tend to forget just how well and how quietly he put together that organization. I mean, you know, so, again, I think it's right now. I think it's just a transition, and I think within the next year or two, he probably will retire at this point.
Yeah, I think so. And Baltimore is a classy organization. Ozzie's a very classy guy. So I think this is mutual respect from both parties to be able to mutually part and, you know, not burn bridges on the way out.
Absolutely.
And then now we move over to a guy that you're a little familiar with. That would be one Reggie McKenzie. I do want to say that as good as Ozzie Newsome did in Baltimore, Reggie McKenzie is a regular David Blaine or David Copperfield or something out in Oakland. He took a very salary cap strapped Oakland team. They had a lot of bad contracts, a lot of underperforming players, and he's turned them into a pretty good contender, and he's done it with a handful of different coaches. Now he gets John Gruden. What do you kind of see the future for Reggie McKenzie?
I think I agree with you first by saying I think Mr. McKenzie did a phenomenal job in Oakland considering where they were and where they've come. I think the issue right now is going to be the contract that John Gruden has and what are the details or the future options that might be within the contract. I mean, you know, he signs a 10-year, $100 million contract. Mm-hmm. Somewhere down the line, it's going to free up his ability to make personnel decisions, if it hasn't already done that. I think that there might be a shift in the atmosphere when the team moves to Vegas. I think they have another year or two, if I'm not mistaken, in Oakland.
Yeah, I think they're two years out.
Right. So I think there it's twofold. I think at that time a decision will be made. But by that time, I think under Mr. McKenzie's leadership, the team will be back where they need to be as playoff contenders. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 2 years. It'll happen pretty quickly when we start seeing some of the shift. Again, you know, Mr. Gruden has a phenomenal contract as a coach, and I'm sure some of that comes with some other administrative duties above just the coaching realm. And so it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be really interesting. Do I feel that Reggie McKenzie can still help them? Absolutely. But if they decide to go in a different direction with that after the 2 year period and prior to the transition into Vegas, and let's say Mr. McKenzie is there when they make their first year appearance or season there, I think at some point he would have done all he could possibly do with Oakland at the moment. And considering the nature of what is in front of him right now from that type of contract with Mr. Gruden, I wouldn't be surprised that he ends up as a GM somewhere else. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. If they can work it out, yes, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. It's, you know, I'm a huge John Gruden fan. He is one of my favorite coaches of all time. That contract is going to somewhat kind of handcuff or kind of strap the franchise a little bit. He's going to want a Parcells, a Belichick-like thing where he wants to not only be the one preparing the meal, but he wants to buy the groceries. I totally get it. It makes a lot of sense, except for, like we said, I think it's going to cost Reggie McKenzie to do that. But I put Reggie McKenzie in the same boat that I do John Harbaugh, the head coach of Baltimore. Whenever Baltimore with Harbaugh or Oakland with Reggie decide to move on from them, I think they'll be technically unemployed for about 24 hours or less because Reggie's a great GM. He's really good at building if you're in the process of rebuilding or trying to get out of cap hell. And John Harbaugh is just one of the best, most underrated coaches in the league. So, I mean, there's a chance if they both get let go within the next year or so, they could pair up and go somewhere. And you kind of have to instantly – it could be kind of what Shanahan and Lynch are doing out in the 49ers is what Reggie and John Harbaugh could actually do together.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that match made.
Because I don't know if they know each other or not. I'm sure in some small circles they might, because everybody's web and everybody's coaching trees and such are a lot more expansive than people believe. But I guess that leads us to, let me go ahead and talk about the Georgia Swarm just a second, and then we will get into our last two topics. I had never seen live lacrosse. John Watts, who here at Impact Media does a lot of our he's one of our main reporters, digs up a lot of stuff for us, has been here since the beginning. We decided to check out the Georgia Swarm. We've been talking to him for the last few weeks. For anybody who hadn't been out, not only do they have killer uniforms and colors, not only do they have killer swag, it's a great game day experience, but Sam Hurst and Mike Garrison, who have been our contacts and done some great things. The game of lacrosse is not only one of the oldest games. I said it here before, all the way back into the Native American days and the early tribes and groups of people have played forms of this forever. But they call it the fastest game on 2 feet for a reason. It is lightning quick. It is back and forth, back and forth. It's like hockey on turf, basically. It's highly competitive. It's very action-packed. It's very intense. It's very physical. I mean, my goodness, it's like street ball and hockey all put into one. There are more low shoulders and dead man picks and stuff like that. It's a fantastic game. I'm actually going to be out at the next home game, which is Country Night, this Saturday night. I believe that is a 7 or 7:30 game. Scotty McCreary, who I believe was American Idol singer. I don't know if he ever won or not. He may have, but he's going to be the guest out there. He's got a 10-minute set at halftime. He's got a 30-minute set after the game's over. There's going to be all kinds of giveaways and stuff like that. And if you're looking for something to do this weekend, it's pretty relatively cheap to go. And it just overall the experience, the Georgia Swarm definitely won me over. That's part of why I'm going back. We're going to try to do some things through Impact Media with them and do some more fun things. I actually got to take a picture with the championship trophy. They are the defending champions from the NLL from last year. And I actually took a picture with the championship ring. And I will just tell you, that championship ring weighs about as much as a baseball, and it was about as big as one. So, Coach, I don't know if you've ever experienced live lacrosse or anything, but I definitely think your kids would get into this.
No, I must admit I have not had an opportunity to experience it. From a live perspective, I would like to go to a game, but it just goes to show you that sports is growing. What is traditional now is starting to meet what we have considered in certain areas untraditional. So sports now is really thriving across the board, and variations of sports or hybrids of sports. As you mentioned earlier, here you have a lacrosse, which is kind of like hockey on turf. So you're starting to see a lot of this stuff coming to play. And again, congratulations to the Georgia Swarm on being the defending world champions, and that just adds one more championship to our state. So, congratulations on them defending it in their season this year.
Yeah, absolutely. For all those people who think, a lot of people try to call out Atlanta, and we all know that most of the Atlanta teams are not my favorite teams, but I follow them because Atlanta is still – my city. For everybody who thinks 95 is the last time Atlanta had a world championship, I easily correct them and say, actually, last year we had one in lacrosse, which counts. And like you said, it's in the safe, it's in the trophy case next to the one in 95. So, hopefully we can add one from the Hawks, or we can add the Gladiators. You got the Braves could take another shot. The Falcons, we'll talk into the Falcons here in a second, but there's a lot of teams in Atlanta that are close, and there's a lot that are like the Hawks that are starting over to rebuild into a big year. So it's a good time to be a sports fan in Atlanta, because there is all these different facets and all these different things year round that you can go watch and get the same kind of entertainment and enjoyment that you would from any of the others. Let's see, I mentioned the Falcons, so let's go into that. The most pressing thing about the Falcons so far, and we're not talking draft yet or anything like that so much, but the most pressing need for the Falcons. I could make an argument it's to beef up this defense, but there's this little guy who could be a free agent out there named Jimmy Graham, and I think their most pressing need is to do everything you can to get Jimmy Graham in a Falcons uniform. What are your thoughts on that, Coach?
I think it'd be an excellent move for Atlanta. They've always been a team that's been tight end driven. If you look at them historically, that's the one piece that they have not still found what they probably feel is a solidified answer for. So if he's out there, I'm sure Atlanta has him on the radar. I most definitely think that's one of their pressing things. I also think they have to look at running back.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely, if I'm not mistaken, I think Mr. Freeman, and I pray that he has a speedy recovery through the offseason, although he was back off concussion protocol, I think he had three of them this past year. And that's going to raise some red flags medically for him. I know they just paid him, so they have to have that discussion as well. As far as the defense is concerned, I think they're right where they need to be. I think in the draft they go after another corner in the draft. So that's going to be an interesting perspective for them as well as solidify Ricardo Allen. I think they're going to solidify him with the contract. Offensively, they can improve a little bit more. On the offensive line, I think at left tackle they have to make a decision with Matthews. He's been a little injury prone. I don't think he's quite panned out to be what they thought he was going to be, but I think that was only due to the fact that he was having a quarterback that ran around a lot. And so that made a difference in his ability to have to block it for an extended period of time. They're also going to have to look at quarterback. They're going to have to look at that now. That is something that is undeniable for them. So, from the free agent standpoint, yes, if Jimmy Graham solidifies them at tight end, it opens that up for them offensively, gives them an additional weapon. But also, the person that's going to be calling the signals, they're going to have to address that this go round, as well as running back and corner. So those are the present things I foresee just as a forecast for Atlanta right now.
Exactly. And a programming note from us here at Impact Media is somewhere closer to the draft, we'll have more information on exactly what we're going to do. More than likely, we'll do some sort of pre-show before the draft, and then the following week's show, we'll do a recap of the Falcons side of it, some of the bigger players, stuff like that. But I don't know necessarily that we'll be at a location because we're still nailing down details there, but I know a lot of people have asked, so I want to just throw that out there that, yeah, we are going to do something for the draft, but it will more than likely just be a pre-show. We'll kind of lead you up to it, and then we're going to watch like fans like you guys are. So I wanted to get that out of the way before we get into our final topic of the night, and that is this particular question. Are the windows of these particular teams closing? And as far as closing, it's can the with the current head coaches and GMs of these prospective teams, I think there's eight of these eight teams with the current head coach and GM that they have, can those two guys bring a Super Bowl championship to that team before either one of them or both of them are pretty much ran out of town? And we're going to go team by team. It'll go pretty quick because I think we pretty much agree on a lot of them. But I want to start right. And in fact, five of these eight teams have won with the current head coach GM that they have. So we'll go ahead and get those out of the way. I want to start with the Seattle Seahawks with John Schneider is the head, GM, I believe, and Pete Carroll is the head coach. Do you think Seattle gets a Super Bowl before one or both of them are ran out of town?
It's going to depend a lot on what they do in free agency. They have a lot of players hurt. They have a lot of players up for big contracts. So are they salvageable? Yes, they're the Seattle Seahawks, so they're going to be competitive. So I do think that there's a possibility that they may make a run for it, but I'm not quite sure. It just there are some question marks out there. There are some question marks for me with Seattle right now. So as I look at this list, they are somewhere on the outside of the circle for me as of right now.
Okay. Let's go with the New Orleans Saints. I believe that would be GM Mickey Loomis, who is also the GM of the NBA's Pelicans, because the owner owns both teams, and, of course, head coach Sean Payton.
I think they're on a, they are most definitely moving in the right direction. They proved it this year. They have found their swag back. With the absence of a Jimmy Graham over the last couple of seasons, they most definitely have a 1-2 punch in their running game. So I can see New Orleans making a run for it, and they almost made a run for it this go round. So they're right there on the cusp of being right back. So, yes, New Orleans is one of the teams I would pick.
Let me just throw this back out there. You think, since we talked about it earlier, do you think there could be a Jimmy Graham return to the Saints?
No, I don't see that. I don't foresee that just because of what they have on their roster right now and contracts that they're going to have to make some moves on and to negotiate. I don't think it's room for – financially, I don't think it's room for Jimmy Graham right now. It's not impossible, but I don't see it. I don't see it.
Yeah, not to mention that on his way out of town, he had a very Nero-like bridge burning. So that would be pretty difficult, too. Now, I understand
right.
if you want to plead the fifth on this next team, and most people know obviously why, but Green Bay Packers. Now, they did just get a brand new GM, and he is tied, I believe, to McCarthy, who – no, he is not tied to McCarthy. I believe the GM has a 4- or 5-year deal. Mike McCarthy, the head coach, has, I believe, 1 or 2 years remaining on his schedule. Yeah.
There's a lot that has to take place with Green Bay right now. There are a lot of needs that have to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in a rebuilding stage, honestly, right now. We have to find a running back. We have to find some linemen. We need a dominant pass rusher. So will we always be contenders? Yes, because at the helm of that is Aaron Rodgers, who's highly respected in the organization and also a player that can just kind of help a lot of players overachieve just because of his competitive nature. But there are some things that we have to answer, and I don't know right now if Green Bay is in a position to do that as quick as a season. Within 2 seasons, yes, but there's a lot of things that have got to be fulfilled from a free agent standpoint as well as a draft perspective. There's a lot that has to come into Green Bay right now to solidify that. So I don't
right.
know right now if we're in that position. You never can tell, but I don't see it right now. Not right now. Now, once we get in the preseason, minds can change, things can change, moves
right.
that will be made that can strengthen the organization can change. But right now, I don't see that right now. There are a lot of holes that have to be plugged right now in Green Bay.
Right. I got you down for a question mark on that one because I think I'm right there with you. Aaron's always going to have you in a position to be successful, but I think the offensive line has some questions. I think the running game has some questions. I'm okay with most of the rest of the offense. I think the defense needs to get a little younger, and they need to get a few more moving parts. But, yeah, overall honestly, next week, more than likely, Green Bay is going to be one of those teams that I think we're going to kind of hash out and fix because I think it's a pretty easy fix. It's just it's going to take a lot of moving parts. But Green Bay is, like you said, it's always going to be a contender because Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback, and he instantly upgrades everybody to the next level. So I think we're both on the question mark level there as far as if it's before one or the other get moved around. But it's – they're always entertaining watch, and I always have respect for the Green Bay Packers. They're just one of those franchises.
Right.
Moving on to the Baltimore Ravens. Of course, we talked about Ozzie Newsome earlier, and I talked about John Harbaugh. Do you think Baltimore will raise a Lombardi before one or both of them are elsewhere?
No, I don't see that with where they're going with their transition right now. They have a lot of things that they have to work on as well. They're an aged football team in some areas, mm-hmm. and they have a lot of holes to plug as well. So, no, I don't see Baltimore as of right now.
I agree, and not just to mention that we know Ozzie's only got another year as the GM, and I honestly think that they're actually going to move on from John Harbaugh unless they're in the playoffs. I think they move on from Harbaugh and Newsom after this year, so it'll be a complete house cleaning, and hopefully Flacco goes with them, because that's part of the reason why, to me, they haven't been as successful. Flacco had one good run, he got a Super Bowl and a fat contract after it, and he went back to being half Matt Ryan. So Matt Ryan always wins the Cam Newton debate, and he always wins the Joe Flacco debate. He's better than both of them. Next team up would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. We all know about Mike Tomlin out front. I am trying to remember who their GM is off the top of my head, but either way, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I think Pittsburgh has a very strong chance. I think that Coach Tomlin has done a phenomenal job over the years with that organization as his head coach. He has enough depth on the team. Some of their issues come with just timing, with players getting
right.
hurt. It's just the timing. And mm-hmm. so I think the one thing they have to address is their quarterback. They have to address the quarterback issue, because I think each year they're kind of running into – whether or not that position is going to remain, and if that particular person is going to remain at quarterback. So Roethlisberger is kind of up and down each year about whether he wants to retire or whether he wants to play, and that kind of is, in a sense, a distraction, in my opinion.
Right.
And so, but again, Coach Tomlin does a phenomenal job. He has the pieces in place. He has the running game. He has the receivers. His offensive line. His defense is playing well. So I do think that there's a strong possibility that they'll be right back in there as well. I feel that they're in the hunt. They're in the hunt to raise it again.
Okay. Yeah, I think Le'Veon Bell is going to be an issue for them. They're going to try to franchise him. He's going to pitch another fit. And if he doesn't get a big contract, I think Le'Veon Bell ends up moving on. The up and downness, even though I got Big Ben still as the fourth best quarterback in the league right now, the up and downness, the fact that their defense still has a few issues here and there, I got them as a soft no before they move on from either head coach Mike Tomlin or the general manager. Kevin Colbert is actually the general manager. I think they're going to move on from one or the other. They're another franchise that does not like to move on every other year from head coaches, but I feel like Tomlin, as good as a rah-rah guy as he is, and he's pretty good at special team stuff as well, I feel like they're going to try to move in a different direction, and eventually it's going to be right around the time that I think Berger walks out. But so far, to recap, of the teams that have won in this time, you say Pittsburgh and New Orleans have a good chance to raise a Lombardi before they split the GM or the head coach. We both say no on Baltimore and Seattle, and we both have Green Bay as the soft question mark, because more than likely next week we're going to go about fixing them, and it's going to be a lot of fun, Green Bay fans. You guys are going to enjoy it. Now to the three teams that have not won one that we want to get into, and of course I'm going to start with the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs, obviously, with Andy Reid. I am in the process of looking up the GM as we speak. I feel like I should know who it is. It is Brett Veach is actually the general manager. But we'll go with the Kansas City Chiefs, who recently traded Alex Smith to Washington and are going with Pat Mahomes, and have already told people that they're dumping a few veteran contracts. So do you think the Kansas City Chiefs will hoist a Lombardi before either Brett Veach or Andy Reid are run out of town?
That's another tough one. I don't think so, just because they have a young football team. I
mm-hmm.
think they're close, though. I think they're close, and I'm on the bubble, or on the fence with them. there is a strong possibility they play well, but that also requires them having some good veterans that help balance that. So I'm
right.
not quite sure with that being the case, and it depends on how many veterans they make moves on contractually, if it's going to keep them in the hunt that way. I do think that they will be playoff contenders and have a shot, but it's going to be hard to say depending on the veterans that they let go. That's going to be veteran specific for me. So I would say they're in the hunt. They're in the hunt.
Okay.
I like what Kansas City is doing. I think they're in the hunt.
Okay. Yeah, I think you got them as kind of a question mark, kind of soft no maybe, but I got them as a soft no as well. I feel like as good as Andy Reid is as a coach, I feel like he may not be somebody who can win you the big game, like another coach we're going to mention here in a minute. I got them as a soft no. I feel like they're going to move on from Andy Reid in about 2 or 3 years. And as close as they are, I don't think they get past the second round of the playoffs in either of those years. But now that moves us to the two teams that will probably either get us the most attention negatively or positively. And I'm going to start with America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. Now, we all know Jason Garrett is the head coach, and we all know the general manager is also the owner and president, Jerry Jones, with Stephen Jones kind of as a 1A to that, his son. Obviously, they're not going to move on from the general. Well, actually, that's not necessarily not a possibility, because Jerry wants to hang on long enough to where he gets a Lombardi, but at some point, he's going to have to step back and let Stephen take this over. So before Jerry steps back, or before they get rid of Jason Garrett, do the Dallas Cowboys raise the Lombardi Trophy?
Well, they're going to have to do some stuff with their personnel, starting with Dez Bryant. It's going to be interesting what they bring back, who will be willing to sign back. I think is what's going to be Dallas's biggest issue.
Right.
I think they have some things that they got to clean up in the locker room from that perspective. They most definitely have a football team that can do it, so I'm going to put them in the hunt. But again, they have to address some issues now, and they have to clearly have those issues addressed and resolved prior to the season. So I'm going to say there's a strong possibility they can hoist it. I'm going to put them in a yes.
Okay, and I'm going to try to be the realist and take off the fanboy hat, take off the big D hat, and stick it over here beside me. Honestly, it's tough to even say this as a big Cowboy fan, and it's something that I enjoy watching games with my mom. She's the one who got me into the Cowboys when I was a little kid. But Mom, even if you're listening, don't get mad here, but I actually don't think that they're going to win a Super Bowl under Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones. I don't know. It depends on how long Jerry hangs on as far as the general manager, but I feel like in the next – probably about 2 years from now, you're going to see a new head coach in Dallas, because Dak's going to need a little more development and help. And I feel like Jason has done as much as he can do with this team, as good a coach as he is. And I think he's one of the better coaches in the league, as good as Jason Garrett is. I think he's done everything he can with the team around him. So I'm actually going to say a no on the Dallas Cowboys, and, people here at the studio will probably throw things at me, but that's, you know, I'll live with that.
Wow, that's interesting, because I think that Dallas would have been, you know, you have Ezekiel Elliott back during the time of their suspension. They're a different football team, and that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at where he was missed and games were lost and things were close. If he's there, they're a postseason team. So, I would say at least they would have at least gone second round of the playoffs easily.
Yeah, I agree
So that's the only reason why I say that, because they get him back this year without the threat of losing him, you know, other than due to injury for the year.
Right.
That was just kind of going up and down. That was kind of a seesaw thing that kind of kept the team kind of off balance to me with the media, you know, that played around the whole Ezekiel Elliott, you know, saga. So now that that's behind them, I think that's – that's something that is put in place and now they can kind of get back to Dallas Cowboys football. So that's why I give them a yes.
We might fix Dallas as well as Green Bay next week because one of the things that stuck out to me is Dallas is one of the one of three teams in the entire league that has three quarterbacks, basically more than two quarterbacks, into their second contracts. Everybody else pays two and pretty much drafts everybody else. That's where all their money's going is into these wide receivers. So I feel like they got to work on the depth of this team. It was a glaring weakness this year with Zeke out, with the left tackle out, with Sean Lee out. They got to work on the depth, I think, is what overall is going to be. And, you know, don't get me wrong. We all know I'm not a front runner. If they do make a Super Bowl run, I will do my best to lead the parade. But I don't know, just looking at it from right now, unless a lot changes between now and the next the next start of the season, I don't see it happening under Jason Garrett. But of course that leaves us with the last team, which usually gets us the most hate mail between some you and mostly me on this team, and that's the Atlanta Falcons. And it's because we're realists on it, but even if Reggie was here, we would get a very probably similar answer to what we're going to say, I think. But the Atlanta Falcons, obviously with general manager Thomas Dimitroff, he is into his second head coach, I believe, at this point. He was all of the Mike Smith years, and he's been here for all of the Dan Quinn years as well. And then you get Dan Quinn as head coach. Do you believe the Atlanta Falcons, under those two guys, will bring a championship to Atlanta before one or the other is given a Greyhound ticket?
I do. I think Atlanta's going to be in the running for the 2019 Super Bowl. I think that's going to be their focus going into the season. When I look at this football team last year and I look at all of the teams that went into postseason play, conference championship, and even Super Bowl, there was not a team Atlanta wasn't right there on the cusp or beating or should have won the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say what they say. Again, they're going to have to address some issues that they have, though. They got to address running back. They got to address tight end. They have to address the secondary. They need to also look at maybe a linebacker. They got to find a middle linebacker specifically. And they got to address quarterback. They have to address that issue now. So I think with that, I think you move in a direction where you don't necessarily give Matt Ryan a long-term contract, maybe 2 years, a year off. And you go out and get your quarterback now. You got to go get one. I mean, it's time. But I do think that is going to be the driving force behind them. Minnesota almost pulled it off.
Right.
Atlanta now can – with Minnesota was a semicolon, Atlanta could be a period. And I think they've been there. They've been there close enough in the last 2 to 3 years to understand what it takes to complete a season and to get back to the dance, if you will, or the show. And I think that's going to be the one thing that's going to drive them this year. I think Atlanta jumps out the gate, solidifying themselves positionally so that they can be in the Super Bowl here at home. I think Atlanta will be there this year. That's my prediction. They will be in the Super Bowl this year.
Wow, you heard it here. We're gonna splice that up and play that a lot throughout this year, as we like to do here on Sports Club and Impact Media. I think my take on it is going to surprise a lot of people, and for once, I'm not being sarcastic. I actually agree with you, Coach. If you had asked me before last season, I would have said no. I don't think, and even most and part of the way through the season, I didn't see this as a team that I thought was a big enough threat or that could be a big enough threat in the next couple of years. But, you know. Yeah, I think we lost Coach. Not sure what happened. We had some kind of technical glitch there. But I will go ahead and say what I'm saying is what the Falcons should do. My short answer for next week, you guys should listen to the full answer. A way that Atlanta can address two needs is you go get Roquan Smith from UGA yes, I think that's where he's from. You go get him. I think he can be a good linebacker to solidify your core. And you go get the guy I'm talking about, Luke Falk, because I think he can be a potential guy to pass the baton between Matt Ryan. But But yeah, I think that's definitely something that they could do to fix everything. But there's a handful of teams. Just to recap real quick, myself and Coach think Atlanta can raise a Lombardi before Dimitrov and Mike Smith are let go from their positions. I've got a no on Dallas. He's got a yes. He's got a yes on Pittsburgh. I've got a no. We both say no on Baltimore. Question mark on Green Bay because we want to see more. But we think they're pretty close. We both think New Orleans. We both say no on Seattle. And he's got kind of a soft no on Kansas City, and I've got a no. But, you know, lots we can get into. Lots we can really talk about. But that's going to do it for us this week. Appreciate Coach Haywood Hill calling in. As always, it was good to have you back on the show. Next week, we're going to talk some Green Bay, Dallas, Atlanta. We're going to talk some, I'll talk a little more Georgia Swarm. Maybe we'll have some players on and some other things and such. But for the coach, for Cody, for Reggie, for John and Joseph, and everybody else here at Impact Media, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?